Thank you for the introduction. It's not often noted, but fairy ring is the first turf grass disease to be accurately associated with a microorganism. In 1792, Wollaston was walking around a pasture in England and saw a fairy ring occurring in the grass, and used a spade to dig in and postulated that the mycelium that he was seeing in the soil profile was the cause of the disease. Since then, we've had trouble trying to identify the pathogens responsible for fairy ring, particularly from the soil profile. What Wollaston uncovered in 1792 was a very complex pathosystem, probably definitely unrivaled in turf grass pathology, but maybe in all plant pathology as a discipline as a whole. Fairy rings cause a variety of symptoms. As classified by Shantz and Pomiesel, type 3 symptoms are simply rings of basidiocarps, which are mushrooms or puffballs. Type 2 symptoms are rings of luxuriant growth caused by the mycelium in the soil profile, releasing plant-available nitrogen in the form of ammonium to the grass and causing luxuriant growth. And type 1 symptoms are rings of necrotic turf, which are caused on the outer edge of the subsurface fungal colony mostly by hydrophobicity caused by the mycelium in the soil layer. Fairy ring fungi are present at various depths in the soil profile. There's two classifications: lectophilic, which is thatch inhabiting, and also edaphic, which is deeper in the soil. Edaphic fairy ring fungi, which are not commonly seen in golf course putting greens, can go 4 to 8 inches in the soil profile. They also have been postulated to cause type 1 symptoms in a variety of different ways. The most commonly cited is, like I mentioned, hydrophobicity. In this picture here, you normally can see an orange discoloration in the soil profile where fairy ring fungi have inhabited. Here in this orange arrow, this is a droplet that has been laid 2 days previously, so you can see the high degree of water repellency that fairy rings can impart on the soil profile. In the white, this is a freshly laid droplet. But it's also been seen in several other research studies that direct penetration, also ammonium toxicity, the release of too much ammonium, or insufficient nutrients behind the ring causing type 1 symptoms. And then also there's several fairy ring fungi that have been shown to produce toxins, most notably hydrogen cyanide and agrocybin. But the real problem, obviously superintendents have a problem with controlling this disease because of the complexity of this pathosystem. And we as scientists or researchers are not really sure which one of these over-reported 60 different basidiomycete species are responsible in putting greens in particular. These different species have been reported in lawn and landscapes, but we've never really looked at narrowing down to what species are most prevalent, particularly on golf putting greens where most of the control practices are implemented. We have several obstacles to accurately identifying the pathogens responsible for fairy rings. The first of these is that traditional identification is based solely on the basidiocarp or the mushroom or puffball that the fungus produces. On golf course putting greens in particular, practices such as aerification and particularly daily mowing, which can occur at very low mowing heights, 2.5 to 3.5 millimeters, simply don't allow the basidiocarp to reach a maturity level sufficient for identification. Also, we're dealing with fungi that are present in a very diverse soil profile, so isolation procedures can be quite difficult, and you can get a lot of contamination by non-target species such as ascomycetes and zygomycetes. We did, however, find some puffballs that we were able to identify with traditional morphological procedures. This is the inside of a puffball, and this is the gleba layer, and what we're seeing is capillitial threads, and these are highly sclerified and pigmented, which is associated with a lycoperdon type or Bovista type of puffball. However, in the southeast, we've also sampled some gleba layers that have this characteristic, which we do not see the highly sclerified threads, which this is not capillitium. Instead, we see what are more mycelial characteristic threads associated with the spores, and these are pericapillitial threads. This is a phacillum type of puffball. And thirdly, recently, we've seen some puffballs that have their basidium arranged in peridials. And these are sand-like granules that the basidia are produced from. And there are no capillitial threads and no pericapillitial threads. This is an arachnean type of puffball. And lastly, we also see some differing mycelial characteristics between these puffball species. So in the southeast, at least, where puffballs are involved, which are our major varying species, we definitely had an idea that we had a few different species responsible. So our objectives were to try and develop procedures for identification of varying fungi from symptomatic rings on putting greens. Not only did we want to use the traditional morphological characters, but we also wanted to use the infested soils and somehow try to identify the varying fungi that are infesting these soils. We also wanted to evaluate the use of a soil DNA extraction procedure as a method for varying pathogen detection. And lastly, when we collected all our samples, we wanted to try and examine the distribution of varying fungi in as many different regions as possible. So our methods, we extracted DNA from 98 unknowns from Bermuda grass and bent grass putting greens with varying symptoms. 55 of these isolates were isolated, what I consider the easy way, from the above ground basidiocarp, from the puffball or mushroom context tissue. 14 of these isolates were extracted from mycelium isolated from a soil block. We collected cup cutter plugs and sliced them longitudinally, exposing the soil profile and laying them in a paper towel, in a Tupperware with moist paper towels for a period of 3 to 4 weeks, 3 days to 4 weeks, and extracted directly from the mycelial cords. However, 29 of the samples, we extract the DNA directly from infested soil. We also extracted DNA from 16 known type isolates, which were acquired from the ATCC, their American Type Culture Collection. Also, we had some donated isolates from Japan, Pennsylvania, and also some personally collected isolates, which were from forest ecosystems and also from lawn and landscape ecosystems. We amplified the ITS1 and the ITS2 regions with basidiomycete-specific primers, so we're just specifically going after the phylum Basidiomycota with ITS1F and 4B. The reason we use the ITS region is that it's a non-coding region and has been shown in the past to be fairly good at speciating fungi. So I want to go through a little bit of our soil DNA extraction procedure because I really think this could be a future, a potential really good future use or future tool for identifying these varying pathogens. So we obtained a cup cutter plug from the edge of a symptomatic ring. We took a 10 millimeter cork bore from the symptomatic area where we noticed thatch degradation or orange discoloration. This became a 10-gram sample, which we then shook in sodium pyrophosphate to flocculate the soil and break up the soil colloids. This also enhanced washing We did not want any spores in the sample, or as not as many as we could help, because then that would be Ascomycete or Zygomycete. So we washed them through a series of nested sieves, 850 microns, 250 microns, and 63 microns, and then we kept the distribution range, or the particle size range, of 250 microns to 63 microns, because in previous research it's been shown that's the size range where the basidiomycetes are most diverse. And lastly, we ran it through a commercially available soil extraction DNA kit called PowerSoil from MoBio Laboratories. So with this soil DNA extraction procedure, we did 61 total samples. Of those, 29 we were able to get a direct amplification and a direct sequence from. So from that, that seems low at 48%, but actually compared to isolating these fungi, that actually is very good. 36% we got an amplicon with muddled sequence, so the potential there is that we had more than one basidiomycete species amplified. And 16% we had no amplification. So we took all of our samples together, all 98, and we compared them to known GenBank accessions using an online megablast. Highly similar sequences were downloaded and included in the analysis to aid in our identification. All these sequences were aligned with Clustal W, and the alignments were visually checked for consistency and accuracy. The phylogenetic trees were then constructed with maximum parsimony analysis, and the bootstrap values were based on 1,000 replicates. So what we're trying to do is get all of our sequences into clades which we have known sequences, or we have sequences of known identified fungi, so that we can identify them based off of the DNA. So our first here, this is our mushroom clade. So I've divided into the mushroom clade and the puffball clade. We have 18 parsimonious trees, and I'm representing the bootstrap consensus tree. Here at the top is our marasmius clade. We have two samples there. At the bottom, we have our caprinus clade. The taxonomy of caprinus is in flux right now. So it's very hard to identify these, but most of ours were close to Caprinus cordosporus or those two species. And lastly, we have several that are unresolved, including some that we isolated that had clamp connections. Our puffball clade, which actually was the most highly resolved and what we normally see in the southeast. Our top is the Fusillum clade. This group very closely to what a Japanese group has seen, and also Arachnian album, which is our one with the peridioles, and lastly the Bovista clade, which had the true, if you remember, had the true capillitial threads, and we have one again that's unresolved. So if we look at our overall distribution, I'll overlay our Bermuda grass, which is in yellow, and our bent grass sites. We have marasmius, which we found in two sites throughout the nation, and we have caprinus, which we've found in four. Arachnian album we found throughout the southeast and also in Texas, and Vacillum we found in North Carolina and just in Hawaii. And lastly, Bovista, this puffball seems to have the widest distribution of these puffball species. So we found it in California, Illinois, Wisconsin, Indiana, Florida, and North Carolina. So in conclusion, in our sampled area, we have a relatively few species if you compare it to the 60 that have been found in lawn and landscape. Our extraction and amplification of DNA from farrowing-infested soil is possible with the use of a soil DNA extraction kit, so this could be potentially a way to identify in the future. In the southeast, most of our farrowings have been associated with fungi producing these puffball-type basidiocarps, and we've characterized three distinct species. And most of these species have had ITS sequences similar to Bacillus curtisii or Bovista dermixantha. So with that, I'd like to acknowledge everyone on my committee at North Carolina State, our lab, and all of our various funding sources. Thank you for your attention.